Okay, so we're trying to steer it eventually towards Japanese, right?
Yeah, I mean, we can talk about doing the interview and how it had to all be in Japanese, and then one of us can be like, and we learned it all by importing retro video games from Japan. And then I can be like, well.
Nervous about what?
Well, our last day in Tokyo, we were stopped on the street. Well, we were expecting this, but we were stopped on the street in Akihabara and interviewed for a program called Zoom In
I was there.
Saturday.
The Zoom In Saturday interview.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember what I said at the time. I'm like, that's probably just some local Tokyo program.
No, it's like one of the biggest, if not the biggest, Saturday morning talk shows in the country.
Does Good Morning America have a Saturday edition?
I don't know.
I don't know. Well, if it did, that's what this would be.
Oh, dear God. So, how many people in Japan watch this show?
Well, let's see. Japan has 100 million people.
Yeah.
It's one of the more, if not the most, popular Saturday morning show. I don't know. I suppose some people don't watch TV in the morning on Saturday. I don't. I'm going to miss the program because I have to work.
Oh dear. Do you like a DVR or something?
I do. I just got to figure out how to use it.
Oh dear. Okay.
Like, my Blu-ray player has DVR capabilities.
Oh,
My wife
interesting.
knows how to use it, so.
You try and use it, just flashes 12, 12, 12, because you're terrible with electronics of all kinds.
I think the electronics have evolved beyond the 12, 12, 12 thing. Now they'll just be like, error, error.
Oh.
Read the manual.
Well,
Call customer support.
I don't want to say it's the most interesting thing, but sort of a caveat of doing this interview was that we spoke in Japanese for it.
Oh, it's a liberal use of the word spoke, but
Yeah.
The pre-interview was a lot better than the interview.
Well, that's because the guy we talked to was super into games and like was asking stuff about games he liked, like Dragon Quest and everything, and yeah, what's his name? Takahashi Meijin.
Yes.
Yep. I learned things just talking to that guy. And it wasn't until afterwards I went into a shop that I realized that Boken Shima or Boken no Shima or whatever the title for that was, the subtitle was actually the American title, which was Adventure Island. So very, very interesting. I guess he retired, huh? That's what I
Well,
learned from that.
someone actually left that as a post on our Facebook that he retired.
Oh,
And
okay.
I'm like, oh, that would be a good thing to do a story about it. But I didn't realize you didn't know who he was. But
Well, I
yeah.
mean, given that I only played the American version of the game,
Don't you watch Game Center CX though? He was a guest star on that once.
Well, I do, but I don't. I don't understand a lot of what they talk about because it's a little hard to follow without subtitles, and the Kotaku version doesn't translate those interesting history lessons.
Oh yeah, the Kotaku version is kind of just the challenges, right?
Yeah. So
No
I
offense
guess
to Kotaku, though. I mean,
no.
if it weren't for Kotaku, most people wouldn't know what we mean by saying Game Center
Yeah,
CX at
if it
all.
weren't for Kotaku, people wouldn't have gotten signed autographs from Shinya Arino because he didn't do anything at all in TGS, but had a wonderful session in L.A. apparently right beforehand.
Yep. I saw so much for the Japanese fans. And you know what? The
I
Japanese
guess
fans were way more into it. Remember those two we met?
they also speak the language. Yeah, those two guys are pretty cool.
We got to put up a picture. We'll attach a picture of those guys to this post. But we met two, I don't know. I call them die fans, like big fans or whatever. But like they were decked out in I don't think there was an article that they were wearing that didn't have the Game Center CX logo on it.
I know, right? Like even their business cards are like a take.
Yeah, I exchanged business cards with them, and they had a business card case that had the Game Center CX logo on, and business cards that had the Game Center CX that were like, I don't know, like I still think he might have worked for the show. But yeah, maybe not, because someone who actually worked for the show wouldn't deck themselves out in entirely that. Yeah, apparel. Probably, you know what I mean?
Probably not. They're probably trying to get his attention, and of course, no one was able to because he was just in and out.
Yeah, I know.
But I mean, you know, if
it was nice that he stopped by. But,
yeah, I guess.
I mean, that's a place you're going to get totally mobbed. You know what
that's
I mean?
That's true. There must have been a way they could have handled that. I don't know, but it's something that we didn't, you know, probably you didn't see a lot if you've been watching the videos or listening to our podcast or reading the Day One report. You just the exhaustive Day One report you just put up on 4CR. But you know, we
tipped that up in Word, it came up to 26 pages.
Oh my goodness, that's crazy.
But some of that was weird spacing with the photos and stuff. But yeah,
sure, still, yeah, it's not a light read, and but I mean, like, all of that sort of belies the fact that we have to navigate a lot of what we do in Japanese while we're at the show.
Yeah,
definitely. This interview being no exception. So if we can either locate a clip of it online somewhere, or if they let us put one up, that would be super fantastic. If not, we can at least put up.
Let us put one up, but they might not notice if we put one up.
Yeah. Well, I'm. You know, regardless of what happens, I can at least like show an example of because they do this about this time every year. It seems I've been looking at YouTube to find examples. So you know, our segment's supposed to be about 2 minutes long or so, from what we've been told.
Yep.
So that should be pretty interesting.
But I don't know. It might be longer. I mean, they've been emailing me off and on about getting more details about the show.
Yeah.
And they're like, so what television station is it broadcast for? And I'm like, internet? And they're like, how have DVD sales been so far? And I'm like, steady. that's a safe answer.
Yeah.
But yeah, they asked a lot of questions about the process of making it, and like why we did it. And I don't know. That was a hard question to answer, why we do Famicom Dojo. But anyway.
Well, we tried to answer it, and it kind of came down to something that you said about sort of recording this history of Japanese retro gaming in English that no one had done before, and people still, you know, are doing it in some kind of a, you know, ancillary fashion, like you know, there's a this Juwario show about games you can play if you don't know a lot of Japanese, basically.
Yep.
Or just stuff about modding systems across the ocean there, like a Mexican Waluigi's Lost in Translation.
Yeah,
oh, sorry, let's rip it into anyone. Both of those sort of cover those issues.
Oh,
You know, I don't think we'd know as much Japanese as we did if we didn't love import gaming. Is that fair to say?
I think I'd know more Japanese if I didn't love import gaming, because I would have spent more time studying Japanese and less playing games. But I think it's definitely good practice if you're already studying Japanese.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I was not really importing at that time, so I was like, I studied Japanese in school for like 2 years before I even went over there. And spent a semester at the same school you did in Nagasaki, and so I think you were importing by that point already, though, weren't you?
I was importing since my first year of college.
Yeah.
So that was 98.
Okay.
I met a Japanese exchange student who was really, really into video games. He was into Saturn, actually, and that's what got me kind of into Sega.
Oh, right.
Saturn was pretty much dead in America by 98. I mean, there were a couple more games that were coming out, like House of the Dead and Panzer Dragoon, which I, you know, luckily my timing was right, and I was able to pick up some of those without having to pay outrageous eBay prices.
Oh, no kidding. And you're also well poised for the launch of the Dreamcast to be a fan of Sega. So that can't hurt.
This guy, he had, I don't know, maybe just hundreds and hundreds of Saturn games, and they were all imports, and some of them seemed really, really interesting. He loaned me Cho Aniki. That was the first game he loaned me.
Oh God!
I said, can I borrow one of these? And he's like, borrow this one. And I'm like, I was not prepared for this.
I didn't learn about that game until years later.
He's got a million games. He recommended this one to me.
It must be great.
it was. It was.
Well, was this for Saturn? Because I have Cho Aniki and I Cho Aniki on PC Engine.
Yep. This was. I forgot the subtitle of it, but it was. It was on PlayStation and Saturn, and it was. What was it? It was Cho Aniki something 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 something.
Sure.
But there's also one for the PlayStation 2, but it wasn't very good.
Oh no!
Well, then again, none of them are very good. Wait, hold on. Let me take that back. The PC Engine ones are solid games, just really, really, really weird.
Yes.
But like the Saturn and PlayStation 2 ones are just the best examples I can think of Kusoge.
a phrase which you use in the interview that I'm not sure they can air.
Oh, yeah.
It had me doubled over in laughter.
This might be the only clip they used, too. Like, they interviewed us for, I don't know, 10 minutes, 15.
Yeah, it was a while.
It was a while. Well, part of it was because I'd answer, like, the first part of their question quite well, and then they ask a follow-up, and I'm like, sometimes I didn't know, I knew what question they were asking me, but I didn't possess the vocabulary to properly answer it.
Right.
I thought I understood the question they were asking, but they were actually asking something different, which became known later after I'd rambled about something unrelated for a while. You know, that's why I started studying Japanese in the first place. I want to play import games.
Yeah. And
now, I don't know if import games helped my Japanese study, but without import games, I probably wouldn't have taken that Japanese class.
Well, without some study, there's no chance that, you know, we could have been navigating the shops of Akihabara to find the things that we wanted either.
Well, definitely. Now, you don't need a ton of Japanese.
No.
But you do need some. Or the only place you can go is what's on the like Tokyo guide map. And there are. But like my favorite game shop isn't on most of those maps, I don't think. I don't know. I haven't checked recently, but it's a real mom and pop.
Yeah.
I think we saw that because it was, you know, it was a mother and her son who were there the day we were there. And the mother was sitting there, like, in her little chair, cleaning game cartridge ends with a Q-tip, like, watching her stories. I mean, it's just, what? You don't imagine that a place like that exists in Akihabara, which is, you know, technological, you know.
Yeah,
that was really cool that they let us film in there, though.
Yeah, we filmed our last video TGS roundup in that shop, and we got some nice footage of their shelves. It was one of my favorites too, because that's where I got my Duo RX like 4 years ago when I was first there, and I walked around the one day I had free before TGS started. I walked around trying to find that place. And it was not as far down as I thought it was, and it was right about where it actually I suspected it might have been, and it wasn't until I like got back into free Wi-Fi range that I was able to look it up and be like, oh, it's right there. Well, I still had plenty of adventures, and I probably wouldn't have gone to all the shops I went to and found all the goodies I found if I hadn't not been able to find it or Super Potato, by the way, which exists, but now it's like down one of those side streets you wouldn't go down normally. So I found some guy's video of it. You're not missing
too much. I mean, Super Potato definitely is like the store people who like watch like Akihabara reports and things think about.
Yeah.
But that's the thing. They become so touristy and there's so many like foreign people there. Their prices are really not very good anymore.
Oh, no. Like,
selection's still wonderful. They have great selection, but like I'd try one of the other stores first. You're going to find better deals.
Oh, definitely. That's why I found like a Super Famicom, you know, sans any hookups or controllers for like 1,000 yen, which is maybe like $12 right now. That was super, super nice find. And they had like a whole bunch of them like that, and they were in really, really nice shape.
Oh yeah.
So yeah, like I actually paused the video when like this guy like went by a stack of similarly packaged Super Famicoms, and they were like three times as much. So yeah.
Yep.
But their selection I don't think can be denied, and they may have had a 64DD if I had just gone there to take a peek. And that's like the one thing I really wanted out of this trip. But I got a lot of other great things. If anyone,
I can get you a 64DD. I'll hook you up. If you really... I know you want to buy it in person. But I mean, I know a guy.
there's nothing like the excitement of, you know, being there for yourself and doing the hunting, though. But you do have to know some Japanese to understand what you're looking at, because you need to know the difference between the kanji for like used and new.
Yep.
Has
a power adapter, doesn't have a power adapter.
Right. I found that out the hard way when I got my AC. Oh, this is a fun story, which we didn't get to share yet, I don't think. So I forget the name of the store, but I picked
Trader.
Trader. Was it Trader? Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So I went there, I got the AB Famicom, and I mentioned it in that Akihabara report. That I did right before TGS started, and so embarrassingly, I didn't read the box, which said that, you know, the AC adapter and AV cables were not included, so it wasn't in the box, obviously, because there was no space for it. But we went back to the store. It was right after our interview was done. We were like, trolling around looking for sweet deals again, and we went back into the store so that we could like look through those super super cheap bins of Famicom and like Mega Drive games. And
I got baseball for 8 cents.
It was ridiculous. but like I went by, you know, that row of AV Famicom boxes, and you know, taped next to all these boxes were power cables and AC adapters. So I have no idea if like they like found my video and were like, oh, we should do that. But all the prices were exactly the same as when I was there like less than a week earlier. And yep. So I asked if I could, you know, hey, you know, I bought this last week. Can I get these adapters? And they like tried to give me some, you know, off brand thing for like 980 yen or something. It's like, no, I want the real deal. But they didn't have that separately. So I ended up buying those at the other place. But, you know, another thing that you learn reading some Japanese is that these same power adapter will work with the Famicom, the AV Famicom, and the Super Famicom. It's the exact same one for all three. So these are the things that you learn by boning up another language.
So yeah, Akihabara was good. I bought one thing, two if you count baseball.
Yeah.
But I bought a Poke Fami Light.
Mm-hmm.
After you left, I went back and I picked that up.
Oh yeah, I was wondering about that because you kept hemming and hawing about it while I was there.
Yep. Well, I wanted it. It's basically a handheld Famicom. It takes the regular carts.
Wow.
You know, it's not Nintendo licensed. It's game on a chip. So some games probably will behave odd, and I'm guessing no FM synthesis for, you know,
almost
like
certainly
the Castlevania or something, you know, but you don't expect that for something that costs $30.
Exactly, right.
But it has an LCD screen on it, color LCD. It looks pretty nice, and it also hooks up to a television.
Yeah, wow. For real?
Yeah, it does. Although, I don't know, maybe it's because I hooked it up to an HD television with composite, but it looked really pretty blocky and bad. But well, I mean,
it would, yeah.
But I'm sure if I hooked it up to a CRT, it would have looked. Well, they had it hooked up to a CRT there, and it looked.
Yeah.
It looked like the signal wasn't as strong as a regular Famicom, but you know, it was serviceable.
Sure.
And yeah, I picked that up, and I picked up baseball, as I said, for 10 yen. Oh wait, the yen is stronger than the dollar now. Sorry,
it's like
my previous
cents.
Statement of 8 cents was wrong. It was more like 12 cents. Yeah. Now I feel ripped off. But you know, just to test it out, make sure it worked. But I've been playing Super Mario USA on that thing, and I've been having a blast.
Well, I mean, that's another thing too. Is like, you know, if you can't read Katakana at least or something, you're not going to even know what the titles of these games are, let alone play some of them. Like even Zelda has text in it that you got to read.
Well, if you're going to an import game shop, the first thing you need to know is the writing system, Katakana or Hiragana. They're both the same order, because what we assumed that we can do for some reason, and even like even though I knew I was going to Japan, for some reason I still thought things would be in alphabetical order. Do you know what I mean?
Right. Right. Yeah, not so much.
And you start to think that they are, because when you start at the beginning of a shelf, it does start with ah.
Yeah.
So like, oh, hey, it's the same as in America. Awesome. But it doesn't go A, B, C, D, E, F, G. It goes A, I, U, E, O, Ka, Ki, Ku, Ke, Ko.
See, I don't even know what comes next. I haven't memorized this.
And, of course, within the Ks come the Gs.
Right, right.
Ga, Gi, Gu, Ge, you know. You need to know that if you're looking for a specific title. Now, if the title's in kanji, well, then you're going to have a lot of hard time, but yeah. Some of the kanji you learn right away are densetsu.
Yep, which is a legend, okay. Adventure.
Yep, daiboken comes a lot. Remember I mentioned dai earlier, dai, yeah, fan,
like a great adventure.
Yep, great adventure, big adventure, yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
Shin.
Oh yeah, shin, like new something.
Like new, yeah, new or true. It can mean true also. It depends which way they're using it.
I see.
But yeah, it often can be translated to
new. Like Shin Samurai Spirits or something.
Exactly, exactly. You could translate it to new Samurai Spirits or like the true legend of Samurai Spirits, or you know.
Right, right. Yeah. Huh? It's also the same character that's the first character in the word, you know, new, but I forgot how to pronounce it. I there's actually an app that I downloaded for my iPhone. Where I've been like saving interesting combinations, you know, words that I've been learning, and also you can look up the stroke order. So you have to know something about how to write kanji in the first place to guess how many strokes there are, and there's different radicals to even look it up in the first place. But
about the Kotoba app.
Yeah, the Kotoba app. It's wonderful.
That's a great app. It's a great app, and it's free.
And it's huge, but it's free.
It is a huge, yeah. It takes up like 300 megs on my iPhone, but like totally worth it. Totally worth the space.
Every bit, definitely.
I wonder. They must have a version for Android too. I mean, I don't really know Android phone, but
I'm not sure who made it.
It would be. I mean, I can't think that they wouldn't. So.
Right. Right. But yeah, extremely helpful when you're trying to translate things that you're seeing in game stores, or if you're just like bored on the train and you want to know what this ad means, you can just look it up. Pretty fun. So yeah. I highly recommend it for anyone who needs to navigate Japan, or just, you know, needs to translate materials that they already own.
It's good for learning. It's very good for learning individual characters, but to be able to figure out it within context, you should study a little.
Definitely. If you don't have a basis in the language, it's not going to help you very much at all. But my biggest problem is just not having the vocabulary I really need. So typically, I just need to like look up a noun or something for a sentence to make sense, and that's always what gets me, is if there's no furigana, I have no idea how to even pronounce this word I'm reading.
Furigana, for those who don't know, is Japanese has three, well, four alphabets if you count English, which they use very frequently, although often wrongly. but the first one is the phonetic alphabet. It's like 46 characters, and it's called hiragana. And they use this for expressing a lot of connections between words. It's rarely used for nouns.
Yeah.
But, the words in between words is what it's often used for, as well as children's books are often written in this, because it's the first set people learn, and it's the easiest.
And because there are fewer strokes than in kanji, you typically find a lot of games are written exclusively in that or katakana, depending.
Stole it. Wait for it.
Oh,
wait,
I'm sorry.
For it. It's okay.
You're building up to that.
Yes, I'm building up to that. All right. Okay.
I didn't say that.
Okay. Everybody erase that. Okay.
Yep.
The next one is katakana, which is used for loan words. This would be like if a word comes that had no Japanese origin, like personal computer is pasokon,
yeah,
or family computer for that matter. The Famicom is written in in katakana.
Yep.
As Famicom, and our logo is a mixture between katakana and one kanji, the kanji two kanji that mean dojo, and then the last one is kanji. Yeah. And this is the one that gets people, because there's like 20,000 kanji. I mean, you can be essentially literate if you know about 2,000 of them.
Yeah, that's like enough to know.
Because a lot of them are like out of common use. You know, it's like if you crack open a dictionary and you open to a random page, you're going to know maybe 25% of the words, and the rest you don't know, but you've never used and probably never will.
You can at least read them, though.
But that's true. You can read them. Now, for those obscure kanji and for publications that are written with a younger audience in mind, what they'll often do above the more complicated kanji, or in some cases all kanji, will be to put little katakana symbols above them. This is called furigana, which you mentioned earlier.
You mean little hiragana symbols, right?
Yep. Oh, did I say katakana?
You did.
Well, it depends. Sometimes katakana as well.
Okay.
But anyway, but yeah, usually hiragana. So the phonetic pronunciation of what the word is, basically.
Right.
And you know, even in scholarly texts, if they're very obscure kanji, they'll have these furigana.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one of the problems for retro games, although not a problem as far as I'm concerned, an advantage for the retro gamer who doesn't speak a lot of Japanese, is that the screen resolution of the old games really wasn't able to accommodate furigana.
Right.
Now, they could put kanji if they wanted, but they wouldn't be able to put kanji and the reading of the kanji.
Right.
Do you know what I'm saying? Like, if you look at some of the games, like, they'll have kanji on their title screens or, like, put it in, you know, here and there. But the screen resolution, and especially on the portable systems like the original Game Boy,
right,
is that a lot of developers decided that they'd reach a much broader audience if they just got rid of kanji altogether.
Mm.
And you'll find games like Pokemon that are pretty much entirely in hiragana. Or, well, katakana too for the names of the Pokemon.
Yep.
A lot of the early RPGs, Dragon Quest, for example, again, the simple character sets. Now, people who've studied Japanese for a long time will tell you that it can actually be more difficult to read Japanese if you can read all Japanese. Does that make sense?
Yeah, because you know, with the kanji in there, you can sort of see where, like, key words are broken out. So, like nouns, exactly, the roots of verbs and things like that, and it's easier to scan the sentence. But when it's all hiragana or katakana, it literally runs together.
Yes.
And you can't tell where one word begins and one word ends.
It would be like writing a sentence in English with no spaces.
Yeah, exactly.
And no capitalization or you know, so.
Or punctuation, so, yeah.
You know, it can be hard to pick out the exact words. But for kids, this is very good. And, and you know, games were sold as toys.
Yeah. Sorry, collectors.
Yeah, well, I don't know.
Less and less so with the American market.
Oh, you saw a couple games that were definitely not for children at that store, do you remember?
Oh, dear.
Those were not for children. Not for children at all.
I don't think Sudogoichi's newest games are for children either.
Oh, my gosh. It is the best, like, English slogan. It was, sexy and bloody. Very.
I mean, I didn't get a lot of what that interviewer was saying at that was it the Sega booth that they had that?
Yeah, which doesn't that make any weird. Sense because EA is distributing that game.
It seemed like what she was saying was like, how did you come up with this brilliant idea for mixing sex and violence in a video game?
that was a real fluff question. I wish we got questions like that during that interview. Let's pull it back to the interview.
Yeah, well, I mean, we did. We didn't understand the questions all the time. Like, you know, why are you guys wearing the same shirt? And the part I heard was, you have a little logo. You have a big one. Why is that? And
she was talking about the logo.
Aha! She did compliment me on my physique, which, you know, I was too taken aback by, and didn't believe that I didn't say anything. What I should have done, obviously, was ask for her phone number at that point. But
that would have made the show. But I have no idea what they're going to be able to take from that. I think really the only thing that made any sense was when I was swearing.
Yeah.
I found out it's a lighter swear. I mean, like, kusoge would translate to probably more like crappy game than what we've been translating it to. But it's still fairly rude to say. But I don't know. I think that's what they'll probably use. Is like, look at this. Foreigners have adopted our swear words. And you know what? It can't be that strong of a swear word because it was used by our friend the Christian rocker just the day before. So
true.
Yeah, they asked a number of questions and they seemed to be trying to lead me towards topics, but I didn't know where it was going. Like in the pre-interview, he's like, talk about secret codes and like talk about Dragon Quest and talk about Takashi Meijin. But then her questions weren't connected to that at all.
No, yeah, so we were a little unprepared for that. And
someone should have prepared the interviewer. Because they did this pre-interview and they're like, and I was so hyped. I'm like, because I understood a good 90% of what was going on in the pre-interview.
Yeah, ditto.
The unfilmed pre-interview, I should point out.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I'll just say this stuff again. This will be great, you know, because he was laughing. He was cracking up. You know, we had good stories to share. And then this reporter came and I don't know. I've been in Japan for a while, but I'm used to being talked to like a child.
Uh-huh.
Do you know what I mean?
Just because you're like, a foreigner,
I mean, it makes sense, though. If you were watching a Good Morning America.
Yeah.
And they had a man of Indian descent. And the interviewer, speaking perfectly good English up until she asked the questions, went, "Do you like curry?" You know, I mean, it's really, you know, it would have been really, really horrible. In fact, I feel horrible for having said that right now.
Oh, no.
You know, but it would have been the same thing if she baby talked her way through an interview,
to,
you know.
To
it
be just, fair. It makes her,
yeah.
To be fair, curry is delicious.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I know.
No,
Hats off to India. Hats off to India.
No kidding.
For any contributions beyond curry as well. So, I mean, she couldn't talk down to us, but I suffered from pride, Sean.
Oh.
Well, like, during this trip, I felt pretty good because I've conducted a few interviews with Japanese thrown in there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'd been able to deal without a translator for all but one interview. We had a translator for the Arc Systems Works interview.
Still not up at this point, but we'll be getting to the interviews. Not to worry.
But I was able to talk with a lot of people quite well. And, you know, I was feeling really confident in my Japanese. You know what I mean?
Yep.
I mean, I don't think did we have up till that point, did we have any communication problems really?
No, not really. But it helped that a lot of the people we talked to at least knew some English. There was someone nearby who could sort of help out.
True.
And you know, given that we weren't on national television, we were able to wing it a lot more comfortably.
Well, it's very true. You know, when you're not currently on national television, you can pull out your iPhone and look up a word.
Yeah.
Or you can draw a picture. I'm looking for a girl with hair like this.
Oh yeah. That doesn't work so well.
I can't even think of what they're gonna use for that interview because, you know, with an interview where she's gotta ask the question, you know, there were those pauses after she'd ask a question while I was trying to figure out the answer.
Well did you watch the clip? Did I even send you the clip that I've been talking about? Because they heavily edit their interviews, like heavily. There are plenty of jump cuts, so I wouldn't worry about that.
Then maybe. Like, I guess we've been doing our show and we try to avoid the jump cuts whenever possible.
Yeah.
Although in the early videos they were
They were there. Now we take the time to, you know, redo a take.
It's
enough times as it takes to get a good one. But I'm sure that especially because they asked us so many questions about our show and asked permission to use footage from the DVDs that we gave them. That they're probably going to intersperse it quite a bit with with our content, and they'll probably have her voice over a lot of things to sort of cover up any of the actual questions she might have asked us.
Now, we're of course assuming that they're going to use us for more than like 3 seconds.
But, well, no, they told us that they were going to get, because of the two of us, that they were going to try and get like 2 minutes out of it at least, and like, yeah, most of the other ones, they were going to get like maybe a minute. Said.
But I mean, we'll see. They were interviewing a lot of people.
No, I know, but like, you should really do a search for Zoom In Saturday on YouTube, and like, there's people like who have already like recorded their stuff, and like most of them are like about a minute, but they do bigger stuff like going to like a maid cafe, which is the one that I found. It's about 3 minutes long, and it's like okay. The same group of people. So I think we have a pretty good shot of having a fairly substantial segment, and they probably do more than one of them during the show.
But it did make me, you know, once I got home, I cracked a textbook and I looked up some of the things. Yeah. I was quite inspired after that. So, you are a retro gamer. You've been playing games, and you know, most Japanese retro gamers who don't speak the language stick mainly to action games, or like games that have come out in the other language, so you kind of know how to play through them. You know what I mean?
Zelda's a good example because there's actually quite Zelda's a bit of text.
I've met a guy who didn't speak any Japanese who played through Final Fantasy IV.
How?
From memory. Crazy. I suppose you could do it. My brother didn't speak any Japanese at all when I gave him his first import game, which was the Tenchi Muyo game for Super Famicom.
Oh, I played that. Is that the sort of tactics-ish?
Tactics RPG.
Yeah.
Everything was written in kanji, even. Okay.
Oh yeah.
Well, it didn't matter for him. He didn't speak any Japanese at all at the time. So by trial and error, he was able to beat the game.
Nice.
Whatever. I think I beat it too. Maybe, I don't remember.
I played it emulated. I think I beat it as well.
Well, yeah, because once you figured out the system, you know, you could play. You missed a lot of the story, but, you know, that game was fun. Yeah. I'm going to recommend that game because it can be picked up pretty cheap.
Yeah. Well, this reminds me of, you know, the current age when developers are seeming to get more and more upset with the secondhand market. And and it's like, I don't know why that is exactly, because, you know, back in the day, they made something that had, you know, real value to it. I mean, they still do. You still get discs, you still get manuals, you still get cases. But, like, you know, there aren't soft alternatives, you know?
And exactly.
Well, I mean, there are now. Like a lot of these games have come to, like, Wii Virtual Console, Xbox Live Arcade, PlayStation Network, DSiWare, the 3DS store and everything like that. So that's changing. But, you know, a lot of this stuff, especially the rare things, aren't available unless they were, like, really popular, because they just, you know, they're not worth the time and effort to translate. So I'm not really sure why they think they should still be making money off this. You know, it's like they're railing against the nature of economics itself. You know, they've made something of value that's out in the world. Once they've been paid for it, that's it. They don't get a chunk every time it exchanges hands. And people still value physical things and probably will, especially, you know, once a lot of our software goes to being just software without any kind of physical media.
Yeah.
And so it's just going to get worse, I guess, for the older stuff.
Yeah. You got to... A lot of the stores that sell the used games, the retro games, their income wouldn't probably be enough for just the retro games. Maybe a couple in Akihabara, you know.
Right.
But most of these games make the bulk of their money selling, you know, current gen stuff,
just like GameStop.
So I really worry, like, when physical media kind of, you know, eventually exits the market or becomes less important to the market.
Yeah,
like, I think the world of retro gaming might move almost entirely online.
Yep, and then we're at the mercy of the publishers, who just feel like actually releasing them and keeping them up, like they're taking down the Master System version of R-Type.
I think it's some licensing issue. It must be. I just hope they're not taking down all versions of R-Type.
No,
it's
just the Master System one. The TurboGrafx-16 one is still going to be up.
Now, personally, no offense to Master System fans, but I don't care so much because the TurboGrafx version is superior.
Yeah.
But I'm reminded of that saying or whatever when they were taking down the Master System games. I didn't protest because I didn't care about the Master System version of R-Type.
Right.
And when they took down the, you know how that one goes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
When they finally came for me, there was no one left. Yeah.
Exactly.
You know that old quote, right?
Yeah, I mean, and we've already seen this happen, like, you know, with the Microsoft not supporting Xbox, original Xbox Live titles anymore.
Yeah, you know, and all the MMOs that went away.
Yeah, like, you know, you can only play Phantasy Star Online on private servers now, things like that.
The Dodgeball, not Dodgeball, Double Dragon was removed from Xbox Live Arcade.
Oh, I didn't know about that.
We talked about it on our DLC episode.
Oh, okay. Wow, that was so long ago. So many months ago.
But anyway, you know, so far nothing like major has gone away, but the fact is it sets a really dangerous precedent that something could.
Yeah, I mean, you know, any service-based model works as long as the company providing the service feels like providing it. And once it's gone, the experience is gone, or at least the support is gone. So the physical thing that becomes valuable at this point, assuming that you don't need to be connected to a live server to play this stuff, becomes the hard drive on which these games are saved.
Yeah, which is...
So physical media won't go away because there's always something, you know, unless they're streaming these games all the time, it won't be that a real snafu for game enthusiasts everywhere.
On live. You know, convenience is such a thing, though. You know, convenience is amazing. That it would tempt me to even use it. Like, I buy games on my iPhone because there's no cartridges, you know.
Right.
But at the same time, I don't feel like buying a $20 game on my iPhone.
Yeah, but you,
like, I still haven't bit for that for the, like, remake of Final Fantasy Tactics, despite really wanting to play it. You know, if they released that, if the iPhone did have a cartridge slot, and they released that for $35, I would buy it.
Sure. Right.
I don't know why. I don't know why that is. There's just something in me that feels like if I'm not actually getting something,
yeah,
that it's somehow more expensive. I'll buy DS games. I'll still buy DS games, even though they're sometimes not as good as the 99-cent iPhone games I download. Do you know what I mean?
Right. In this modern era, though, there is something to be said for sort of decoupling software from the physical media, because our phones are pretty much Cylons now. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Should I explain
unfortunately,
that?
Unfortunately, I know what you mean.
So like, you know, I've had to replace my iPhone already because, you know, it got damaged. I have some pictures online. Maybe I should put them on our Facebook page too. But it was pretty bad.
Yeah.
But like the phone, even though like my physical phone was damaged and I couldn't use it anymore, my phone as like this like abstract entity didn't go away because, it existed on my computer and all, you know, apart from like my personal data, even my personal data is like synced to Gmail, you know, like my contacts are synced to Gmail. So it's out there in the cloud. My purchases are, you know, stored with my Apple ID, so I can download those games again. So, like, you know,
and that's the thing. For how long?
True. For how long?
Already, apps have been removed. Like when a new Madden NFL game comes out for the iPhone, they remove the old ones from the server.
Right. Well, I mean, as long as you have your copy stored somewhere, you should be able to, you know, reconstitute it. Some. Yeah. So you know, I was able to rebirth my phone in a goo bath, so to speak, without much problem, and it was like nothing had ever happened.
Yeah, that is pretty crazy. And I like the convenience of that, but at the same time, I will, if a game or piece of software is available in two ways, a digital download or a physical copy, I will always get the physical copy. All my Telltale games that I have, including Back to the Future now, I have the DVD disc.
I kind of want to get the Wii version of Back to the Future just so I can have a physical copy of it.
I know that may sound crazy. It's because it's the same. it's the same thing, but I don't know. There's just, even though I don't have the space to display stuff anymore, like these, my game collection is not on display anymore. It is in a darkened closet, you know?
Right.
Time to bring my gaming out of the closet. But anyway,
well, I think with this interview, that's going to happen whether you like it or not. So
everybody, I live in a tiny town. Everybody knows me when I go walking. They're like, ah, Kevin. Hey, Kevin.
They don't call you Vink. That's too bad.
Crap. I just outed myself again. It's time. But anyway, everywhere I go, you know, I have no, you know, real privacy, but you got to assume that a good, well, let's be conservative and say a tenth of the people,
yeah,
watch that program on Saturday morning. Yeah, maybe that is about accurate. So 1 out of 10 people who's in the town are going to go, I know that guy. He's an otaku gamer. Might have to move. Anyway. So I've got about 5 minutes to teach everyone listening to this podcast fluent Japanese. So
okay,
you can't learn fluent Japanese by playing video games. I'm sorry.
Oh, man.
I know. I tried it. I think a lot of people try it. A lot of people. Whenever I read message boards, they're like, "I'm importing this game to learn Japanese." Now, here's the good thing though. If you have some Japanese knowledge, retro games can be a great way to practice.
Sure.
A wonderful way. But like, they won't teach you how to read Japanese.
No.
Not at all. But if you know some Japanese and you're playing a game, it can teach you a lot of new words.
Definitely.
It can teach you a lot of new kanji. Because you'll see the same kanji being used over and over again. By looking at old Famicom cards, that's how I learned the kanji for Densetsu, which, let's put that up in the show notes, what that is, so people can find it.
All right.
And Daiboken. Densetsu. And, but, you know, you'll pick up things like that. You'll start seeing patterns. Okay, let's put it this way. Wii Fit will not make you thin.
Are you sure? Because I think there's some photographic evidence to the contrary.
Yes, yes. Okay. I used Wii Fit to make myself thin. Okay. I did lose about 10 pounds using Wii Fit back in the day. But it wasn't because Wii Fit was this magical board which removed fat particles from my body.
Oh, man.
It was because I was exercising.
Oh, I see.
Any exercise combined, added to what I normally had, which was a no exercise regimen, caused weight loss. But the thing is, I could have achieved the same results by doing, you know, 30 minutes of sit-ups, push-ups, and running a day.
Sure.
I could have achieved the exact same thing. But here's the thing. There is no way I would have done that every day had there not been a video game-like reward system.
Sure.
And I'm going to say that that's the same with learning Japanese through video games. You could probably learn better by reading books.
Yeah.
Or things like that. But if you're inclined to like video games can be an effective study aid for you.
Yeah. A good way to stay in practice because, you know, you don't have the environment to speak or read Japanese a whole lot. And you have something that you like to do in your leisure time that,
exactly,
let you exercise those brain muscles.
If you pick up a game that hasn't been translated and you have the desire to play it, you know, it's going to provide you a lot of the inspiration you need to study Japanese there. Now, actually studying Japanese, the best way is to move to Japan, okay? Everybody go on some site and book your tickets now. Okay, you've probably booked them now. You can start packing. Well, good luck. Oh, a few of you I see have not moved, so maybe it's not in everybody's ability to move to Japan. But it is good. It is good. I'd say the best thing I've done for learning Japanese so far is by living in Japan for 7 years.
Yeah.
Probably second to that. Okay. This one. This everybody can do this one.
Sure.
Marry a Japanese person.
Whoops.
Sean?
Yeah. No. Didn't do that.
I mean that's a surefire way to pick up some of the language.
Yep.
Unless you happen to
speak English all the time in your house.
Ah, yes. Trying to make my daughter bilingual, so we only speak English in the house now.
Right, right.
But before we started doing that, it was very useful. Okay, maybe you don't want to invest that much because textbooks are probably cheaper than a wedding.
Probably.
It depends on the textbooks.
Yeah. And the you've seen the size of school loans here lately, right? I think that costs more than a wedding, actually.
True, true. Well, okay, the next one is if you're of college age or have a college next to you and want to take something electively, take a Japanese course. It's kind of expensive, but by actually having a regiment of learning Japanese, you'll pick it up a lot faster. How long did you study Japanese, Sean?
I studied it for 3 semesters before I went to Nagasaki, and then one more semester while I was there, and that was pretty much it. My knowledge has been stagnant for about 8 years now.
Okay, so you studied for about 2 years.
Yeah.
Before I went to Japan, I had a year, but my teacher was just a student. You know what I mean?
Right.
It was one of those exchange things. Like, he'd learn English and he'd teach Japanese.
Right,
which,
right.
He was a very nice guy, but he really wasn't a teacher. So right. It's hard to count that one. But then I studied for a semester in Nagasaki as well. But most of my Japanese learning has been through osmosis of living here. But a very useful study aid that I found, and I think I'll plug them here, is JapanesePod101.com.
Ah.
They have a lot of the stuff for free. They've got a podcast that comes out all the time, but really it's worth the money to join as a basic member or as a, I don't remember the level higher than that, but then you have access to all their back stuff and lesson notes, lesson plans, study aids, charts, and things like that. And it's pretty easy. If you listen to like one podcast a day, like on your way to work or just sitting around and, you know, speak along with it, I'd say, I mean, they teach a lot of good Japanese, a lot of very practical Japanese. Japanese Pod 101 is not a good way of learning to read or write.
Right.
But if you're looking to speak or listen, I'd recommend it. They're working to add like kanji guides and stuff like that. So eventually it'll probably add.
Honestly, speaking or listening is better to start anyway, because that's how you learn your primary language, is that you're probably pretty fluent in speaking it before you even learn how to read.
So, definitely.
So that's sort of what they tried to do with us, like in our Japanese program that I went to for college. They didn't even introduce some of the writing stuff. So there was this really terrible, terrible form of Romaji we had to learn first.
I remember,
which wasn't incredibly helpful. But once you understood how the phonetics break down in the actual written language, it made a lot more sense what they were trying to show us.
Yep. Now, for those of you who are planning to learn some Japanese and want to know about some game recommendations once you know some, okay, right now I'd like you to stop the podcast for 3 months, okay? Now, stop. Okay, now we're 3 months in the future, all right? You've studied every day. Now you have you know hiragana and katakana, you know a few kanji, like elementary school level.
Sure.
You're speaking some. That's very good. That's great. Some of you have gotten married. Congratulations.
In 3 months. Some of you are back now because your tourist visa has expired.
It was a whirlwind romance. Okay, you know who I'm talking about, Greg. Okay. You know, if there is a guy named Greg who's listening to our podcast who got married in those 3 months, we've just blown his mind. Okay, anyway, so you know some Japanese now. Where do you take it from there? I gotta say that I recommend Pokemon.
No, really? Don't tell me that.
No, Pokemon. Pokemon's great. And here's where I hate to offend our readers, but Pokemon is a kid's game. And the writing is at a children's level. And most of the Pokemon's names are in katakana, and a lot of them are similar to the American ones or English ones.
Right.
So it's and the story is simple to a fault. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I've played the American ones.
So it's easy to pick up and know what's going on. However, this is more of a game like if you want to be like if you want to feel proud of yourself and be able to play a game, you can play some Pokemon. But if you want to learn some new words, maybe it's not the most. Well, what would you recommend?
I honestly don't know. I just point them to youcanplaythis.com, which is Judo Wario's site, where he has an exhaustive, you know, like 4 seasons of videos about the games you can. Well, I don't know. That's not for so much learning Japanese, I guess.
No, those are for skirting. Avoiding the learning of Japanese.
I don't really know because like you know maybe RPGs in general, you know, because I would probably categorize Pokemon as like a child's RPG, but
yes.
if you want a challenge in reading, that's the way to do it. Otherwise, you can probably pick up manga of some of your favorite anime shows and try and read that way. Unless it's something pretty advanced, you'll at least have furigana if there's kanji,
yep.
And some of them are written all in hiragana, which is definitely meant for younger people. Games that are
heavily voice acted for modern systems are good if you're practicing speaking and listening, because
yeah.
They'll read out all, and usually the text is written on the bottom too, so
yeah,
you can kind of match the text to the words. I learned a lot of new words by playing the Sakura Wars games.
Oh sure, the PS3 version of Rage I played was like all in like kanji and everything, and
yep.
that was an interesting experience because the text was definitely on the bottom of the screen as they talked. Now I was able to pick out things here and there, but man, I need to learn a lot more to be able to read and listen at the same time.
This is a very large topic, and we'll probably revisit this a lot about the struggles of being a import gamer and learning the language that's required for a lot of the games. We'd love to hear your comments on this. Games that you would recommend for learning the language, your own experiences, wedding announcements if you've been inspired. I think this is probably the last time we're going to talk heavily about TGS in a podcast.
Yeah.
Thanks for sticking with us with that. But it was a pretty game changing experience for us. So
definitely. And the interview should be up within 24 hours of this podcast going up, and hopefully we should have some kind of feedback from it. And if the site's down and you can't listen to the podcast, well, I guess you won't be hearing us say this, will you?
Well, they should be on our iTunes feed anyway. Okay.
True. But where's the feed hosted?
That internet.
Yes.
It's a series of tubes. So anyway, thank you all for listening. And we'll see you. You know what? We can actually say see you next week. This will be our 20th podcast, right?
Yep, number 20.
And we haven't missed a week.
Not yet.
That's...
Even though we got close.
Don't jinx it.
Even though we got close this week.
Close this week, yeah. Anyway, this is Vink signing off.
It is. Mata Daishu.